We're live.
We're live.
We're going. All right, folks. So today, Carp and I are going to break down, I'm going to say 10. It might not be 10. Might be 7, 8, 9, maybe 10. Blindsides. Blindsides.
Yeah.
During the loan process. This is big, guys. If you got a quick minute, stay tuned because we're going to go through all these things that might jeopardize you actually getting pre-approved in the future, now, later, beyond. So hang tight with us. This is going to be a good one.
Also, if you're in contract and you're just kind of getting through that underwriting approval.
Well, quick freshie.
It could hinder just the approval of the loan and actually you getting financing to close.
Yeah, absolutely. And before I forget, like I did last time, you are either watching or listening to
MLO.
And of course, I'm your host, Addie Nett. I've got my main man, Carp, Casey Carpenter.
Yes, sir.
So we're going to jump into these things real quick. The number one biggest blind side, and these are live stories, folks. These are things that Casey specifically has dealt with a lot recently. Unforeseen issues that have stalled or prevented closing on a purchase of a home.
Yeah, and I just want to give a little like prelude to it, too. So like me and Addie, we're always talking to you guys about how, you know, we do a very thorough consultation with a client. When an agent sends us somebody or, you know, we make contact with a new client, you know, we have a
thorough.
Thorough
pre-soaking before the washer.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've heard us talk about kind of the three main buckets for qualifying on a loan when we go through it. And we usually spend, you know, a good hour session with a client, you know, kind of getting their history, kind of knowing what we have going on. And the things that we really look at and go through are your work, your current work and your work history, kind of what's that look like? What does the income look like? Stuff like that. We also then go into credit. We look at, you know, ask about credit scores, maybe debts and stuff like that on credit. And we touch in on your assets. What do we have for assets? Where's the money coming to purchase the home? Things like that. And these are a lot of items that I think clients kind of expect and know when they're doing a home loan application.
Sure.
You know,
the
okay, my work, my credit, my money, you know, the three buckets. But what we're going to dive into is some things that clients just might not be thinking about to let us know, and they are a big factor. You know, it's like sometimes you might just not be thinking like that's relevant, or maybe that doesn't have to do with your financing at all. But mortgages, home loans, financing, all that, we look at everything, and everything is connected at some way, shape, or form. So you want to just be fully transparent with everything you got going on.
Yeah, I mean, everything eventually comes out in the wash, and we might want to describe these things as skeletons in the closet.
In the closet. Yeah.
So let's go into skeleton number one. Sorry, I was waiting for the cameras to change, but we were too late. The first one would be tax debt.
Yep. Great
this
point.
Is big. And with tax season coming up here in April, this is a big one, folks. So a lot of the times when we're going through the documentation process, you are required in most loan programs to provide your personal tax returns. And if you're self-employed, personal plus business, right? So that's usually a great placeholder. 99% of the times, those forms, the copies that you hold on your desktop or paper form and provide to Casey, myself, and the team are accurate. However, there's an extra little step to verify that those are not fraudulent documents, and it's called the IRS tax transcript. Sorry, that's a tongue twister.
Yep.
So you might start the entire process on a 30-day home close, and it might take the IRS 10, 14, 16 days to issue back what's called the transcripts. Those two items need to be the same. If there's discrepancies between your initial tax returns that you provided, your copies, and the actual IRS copies, we've got an issue, right, Casey?
Yeah, and let me break it down with it too. Like
maybe you could be a little more
so
direct.
Sometimes just out of the gate, you just might be a W-2 employee, hourly or something like that, and you might not be providing tax transcripts. But here's a big question that's asked, and it's part of your mortgage applications you fill out. Are you obligated or liable on any federal debt?
It's a question on the application.
And it's a yes or no. And I get how sometimes someone might look at that like, oh, that's not relevant, or I didn't know that debt is federal, or maybe that's, hey, it's part of my business, so I didn't think it was personal.
And you might owe like $500, you're like, I don't know any federal.
Yeah,
debt.
Yeah.
But you do.
Yeah.
You actually do.
The biggest thing is you want to be transparent if you owe money to the IRS, And sometimes, like I just mentioned, if you're a W-2 employee and we're not looking at tax returns to maybe see if there was money owed in the past, you want to be forthcoming to say like, hey, I do owe money to the IRS from income taxes and stuff like that. And I'm on a payment plan, or, you know, I have owed and I've made that payment already. But it is a question that sometimes comes up, sometimes doesn't come up.
Mm.
And you need to be transparent if you owe federal debt, because that's going to be factored into your qualifying. So just be aware of that.
Yeah. And I would say too, and not to fear that, don't think you can't get approved, because there are a lot of times where, like Casey said, they're set up on a payment plan. And that's great. We can demonstrate, hey, you're on time, or you're making quarterlies or whatever. That's cool. Now, what's not cool is you're dependent on it being discovered through this loan process. Then you're setting up payments and thinking you're good, great, grand. Some loan programs require a certain amount of time to pass to demonstrate on-time monthly IRS payments. Mm-hmm. So you can't just proceed to closing the home as normal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it might require you to have shown that you've made 3 on-time payments to the IRS.
Right.
And it can't be a lump sum. It needs to be 3 monthly distribution payments to them on your debt. So that could hinder you 90 days out.
Yeah.
So great point.
Let's go to number 2, because we got to go through all these and I want to jam through.
Yeah.
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 Number 2, divorce. This is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times it gets confusing, because that's, once again, another question on the initial application that you're expected to fill out, right?
Yeah.
Single, married, separated, divorced.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And they have different definitions. The big issue with the divorce situation is if you have a pending divorce case where you've gone to the court, it's the paperwork has been filed and you're going through the process of it. And sometimes the process of finalizing a divorce from a legal and a loan standpoint, it's different than the person going through it. So to finalize it, we've seen them go anywhere on a very quick 45 days and on a very long years. Most of the time, I'd say that's a 60 to 90 day process on average. But the reason why it impacts a loan situation is if the court is still pending on a ruling and it hasn't been finalized, we cannot close on the loan. And that is because the judge hasn't determined who owes what, whose money's who, and then who's paying other people moving forward, spousal child support. Mm-hmm. So this is called a variable liability that is yet to be determined. It's kind of like when you say you own a car and you got to pay a $700 a month car payment, Casey and I have to factor that into your debt to income ratio to determine what your approval amount and your buying power is. Now, if you've got a pending liability or a monthly payment to be determined, we cannot issue you the loan and determine your approval amount. That is a really big thing that kind of comes up. I mean, I've had clients straight up get like defensive about that,
mm-hmm,
to me. And it's a really tough situation, because obviously I feel for anyone going through that.
Right.
But it's
right.
A guideline, and they're not understanding that piece of the monthly financing to be determined.
Yeah. And I've had it too. And I totally understand. It's a very sensitive subject.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a divorce is, I mean, it's, you know, brutal. You know, it's a family breakup or it's a marriage breakup, right? And no one wants to see anyone go through that. But the reality of the situation is those maybe debts you might be needing to pay that other person,
right,
payment, stuff like that, has to be factored into your qualifying. And if we don't know what that is, mm-hmm, you cannot get a loan issued and approved to you without knowing what maybe payments you might need to be making, or as well as if you guys have joint assets and those are going to be divided, now maybe you don't have that the full money. Account of money. You know, maybe you're not only going to have 50% of that. So we need to know how much money you'll have and stuff like that. On the flip side, you do see it, you know, come back in the positive way where, you know, maybe you're going to be receiving,
right,
you know, some payments and stuff like that. And then that can actually help with your qualifying, you know, child support, alimony, things like that. So it goes both ways, but we need to know what that final outcome is in order to move forward.
And before we go to number 3, I think the biggest thing on that one is a lot of people think like, oh, well, I'm just going to check I'm separated or married and not divorced and get away with it, right? Because on the lending side, you know, we just run your credit. However, going through the file and the process in detail, you've got title and escrow, you got the lender, the underwriter, there are going to be Social Security lien and court checks. So they'll run it through the database and see if there's any open court cases under your social and your name. And that is typically when it comes up in the process, week one, two, three, whatever it might be, for the applicant of which isn't fully honest on the app. So just want to throw that one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we check a lot of things. There's a lot of back end checks, guys, on judgments, liens, courts, debts, a lot of that stuff.
Right.
That's done to verify, truthfully, to make sure, you know, everything's being accounted for your qualifying. And a lot of the times, you know, the safety measure of that is we want to make sure that the person that is applying for this loan is that person. You know, there's no fraudulent activity going on. We don't have, you know, John trying to apply for, you know, Dan over here and things like that.
That's another quick thing on like the pending lawsuits and divorces and stuff. Like currently right now, I'm trying to assist some of my clients who are actually departing from their residence. They're selling it, and it's within a community that is a really small HOA, just like one of those, like, we string up the lights, and we have Karen walking around telling people to pull in their recycling bins, you know? And there's the community park. It's like a $20 a month type of HOA. However, there's this big blow up, and the residents are actually suing the HOA for mismanagement. So there's a pending litigation. And a lot of the times, most often, it is very challenging, near impossible, to actually lend with conventional financing where a subject property is within an association getting sued. It's really, really hard. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing. Like if you're buying a home, there's going to be lien checks and court checks on HOAs and establishments and owners and sellers to ensure that there's no, well, just call it funny business, you know, like,
yeah.
So it's pretty in depth. Some people like, and it can be a challenging conversation with clients when they're like, I just don't see that, how that's a big deal. And like, That's where like we earn our paycheck and like don't get frustrated and be like, I understand, like, yes, you know, you zoom out from a 1,000 point view, that's like not that big of a deal, but it's a legal matter. Mm-hmm. And this is America, so that's how it works. But let's go to our third one, which is bankruptcy. This is a big one.
Big time. And I think what happens with clients on this one is that, you know, typically if it's fresh, it's brand new, you know, you do see someone divulge that or something. Yeah. But a lot of these times these have happened maybe just a couple of years ago or it's in the past, and they just, they think that that's in the past. Well, there is different requirements and stuff like that for bankruptcies. You have waiting periods that you need to have met now since that bankruptcy happened in order to get financing again.
Yeah, and I should have brought my little laminated chart, but it's underneath my keyboard. I have this laminated chart with like all the loan programs and the wait period for the different bankruptcy chapter, whatever number, and the wait periods.
Yep.
But most commonly, a conventional loan requires a 7-year wait period in order to qualify for an FHA loan, the Federal Housing Administration loan. That's a 2-year wait period. So one example might be like, oh, that 7-year, if you want the conventional lowest fee, best rate, best long-term loan, essentially, if you're breaking it down in a spreadsheet, 7-year wait. And it's from the discharge date. So we get some people who their bankruptcy might have taken 2 years to go through, and they did that math in their head. They're not fully pre-approved. They've been looking at
homes. Great point.
They're not actually approved. And then they get all excited. They moved in mentally. They saved up all the money. They've worked on their credit. And then, wah-boom, shebang, they haven't hit the 7-year wait period from the discharge date. Oh, Addy, why are you making such a big deal about it? They can go FHA. Well, what if the house doesn't qualify from a conditional standpoint for FHA, or it's a multiple offer situation and the sellers are leaning toward conventional loan program versus FHA, and now you're not competitive? So there's so many other layers to it, but knowing your BK discharge date, having those papers is super important. And then on a lighthearted note, don't be embarrassed. We see it all the time. Things happen. Life happens. Nobody really cares. But it comes up for us in the lending side when we run your credit. It's actually like the credit reports are super long, tons of pages, but it's on the very first page, discharge. Did I just make a sound effect for
that was the paper going
the paper
through.
When it's really just a PDF?
Yeah, and guys, like sometimes it does show on the credit report on there as a line item that it happened, and so we come, you know, back to you as a client and ask about it if we didn't know. But also on that application, there's a yes or no box. Have you had a bankruptcy within the past 7 years? Yes or no.
And then going back, though, people might have thought from the start.
From the start.
Not the discharge.
Yeah, and so, that's the biggest thing. It is from discharge date. Not from when it was filed or started
or thought
it
about.
It is from when it was completed and discharged. That's when the timing starts.
Yeah, and if you want that fancy-dancy chart, just holler at me in the DM, the message. I can get you that chart and send it over easy peasy.
Because there's different bankruptcies as well, chapters and stuff like that.
7-Eleven.
7-Eleven. Yeah, watch out for those taquitos over there.
That was perfect. Let's transition. We've got three more to go, guys. So this is on a good clip. The next one is co-signer of debt that might not be yours. So this is really big. Live story in the last couple of weeks. And I love that the client, because I do the upfront pre-qualification. So it's not like an official application. It's the streamlined self-checkout. Hey, what do you make? What are your debts? What's this? This is probably what you get approved for. Then I transition them into a full pre-approval, right? So I asked, hey, what's on your, she's like, I don't have any debt. I've got one little credit card. The minimum payment might be $30 a month. And then I go, anything else? Student loans, personal loans. Like I'm digging deeper than I usually do because it's so rare to have someone that just doesn't have any debt, right? And she's like, oh, well, actually, I co-signed for a car for my son. Awesome. Most of the time, people don't remember that stuff or think it doesn't count against their debt. It does. If you're signing for an auto loan for someone else, for the most part, especially if it's new, there's a deeper chapter to talk about excluding it. But most of the time, you have to factor it in. So a $400 a month payment and bam, 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 bam. A lot of people forget about things they co-sign. A lot of people forget about co-signing on a house and that you're subject to the benefits and the consequences of on-time or late payments and the factoring of the DTI. So student loans, big one. I think a lot of parents do sign on for student loans, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, it is something that you need to just, you know, again, be transparent about, because you as a co-signer, you are obligating yourself to that debt. You know, even if you're not making the payments and stuff like that still is an obligation to you. If that person were to, let's just say, not make the payments, that will affect your credit score and things like that. It is tied to you. You are co-signing on that debt. You know, and then on the lighthearted side, it's okay. We see a lot of people co-sign for debts. You definitely see a lot of parents do this. If you were going through the process and you were co-signer on a debt, there are ways to exclude that debt from your qualifying. You can show that other party has made 12 months of payments on their own and stuff and show that is being made by someone else and try to exclude that from your qualifying. But it's just the transparency part. We need to know, because sometimes it just doesn't show on the credit reports and stuff like that, you know, all the time. A lot of the times it's up there up front to try to catch, but.
Yeah, and I guess we could spend a couple of minutes talking about how to exclude it and some things, kind of approaches. So I love that Cart brought that up, because a lot of people say that. It's like, oh, well, they've been doing it for X amount of time. So different loan programs require you to show that, like, oh, yeah, they've made those on-time payments. So if you are a co-signer on something, I think the biggest takeaway is it needs to be in good standing without any demerits.
Yeah, good point.
So if you're like, oh, no, my daughter Susie's taking care of it, it's no problem, she's been paying it for years, but it has four lates on it, you're not going to win that request of exception from the underwriter. You're gonna be like, well, that's shaky terms. Shaky payment history.
Yeah, shaky.
So that's the first check. Second check, be very organized on obtaining supporting documentation to support the payments. Like, have a good correspondence with that person that you co-signed with. Be like, hey, I might need your bank statements.
Yeah.
Have that upfront conversation. Because sometimes we go down these rabbit holes and it's like the underwriter's super chill about it. And like, hey, if you can give me A, B, C, D, F, G, I'll exclude that. And then the borrower goes back, well, there's no way in hell they're going to share those for me. I mean, kind of role playing a little bit here. But are like things we hear all the time.
Yeah, it happens a lot because in honesty, you know, you have another party that doesn't necessarily want to send you their finances, their bank statements and stuff like that. It is, you know, in a way around that is, you know, we can talk to the other party and explain why it's needed and they can send it directly to us, the lender.
Right.
But it is, to Addy's point, you know, satisfactory on-time payments. That's what we're looking for, to show that that person has been truthful and making their obligation on right. those debts. And then the thing is too, like the payment timing, you know, like if it's sporadic, if it's from different accounts, if some of it's cash, if some of it's wire transfers, like that just makes the layers thicker for us to try to show that they're making those payments.
Yeah. Having documentation is super kicker, and being able to be upfront with those people, family members, friends, whoever it might be, that they're going to help you out, it goes a super, super long ways.
Yeah, and especially parents. The biggest hurdle is sometimes parents. Parents don't want to send in their finances to show that you know, they've been making, you know, payments and stuff like that. It's not their loan. Why do they need to send in finances? So just have these conversations with anyone that you're co-signed with or has co-signed for you.
And I'm going to kind of transition into a new title with a story piggybacking on you. So a really common thing is home buyers will receive gift contributions from family members. Oh, that's yeah. totally legal, right? It's very common. I'd say probably a third of all of our clients, most of the time there's someone throwing a gift, whether it's a couple grand, 5 grand, 10 grand, sometimes more. Sometimes grandma's been saving up her nickels and dimes for a long time and she wants to help out her kids or her grandkids, right? So what happens in this process is a couple different steps. Number one, the family member must be open to signing what's called a gift letter. That gift letter pretty much attests to the person providing the money that this is not a loan. So there is documentation that this is not a loan. So technically speaking, even if parents who are like, yes, son, I'll give you 10 grand for your down payment, but you got to pay me back. From a legal standpoint, you are signing a gift document stating it is not a loan. You have surrendered legal right to force payment on that. Just so you know, obviously families will go do whatever they do and like, oh, well, I'll maybe take you to Mexico 1 year when I get my life figured out or whatever. But there's right. no legal standing on that being paid back because you as the gifter provided that. It's not a big deal at the time. You write in the amount, you sign off, easy lemon squeezy.
And it does explain who's giving the gift.
Who's it from?
What kind of relationship you have.
Father, mother,
how much
uncle,
is it?
How much?
The bank account it's coming from with bank details on there, you know, name of the bank, account type, account number, stuff like that. And then you sign and date.
Here's the biggest thing, folks. A lot of the times, and I've been doing this for years and I get ahead of it to prevent a total collapse during the process. So a lot of the times, grandma might be like, oh, Addie, here's $10,000. I just wire transferred it from my bank account to your Chase, right? Or even more modern day parenting, I'll Venmo you $2,500. That is the kiss of death if you've, for most loan programs, you've just made it extremely more complicated on yourself, because guess what? The minute you have funds transferring into your account, we've created extra steps of needing to document where all this money came from. Once again, not personal, it's a guideline. The U.S. Patriot Act, which protects this country on having money smuggled and brought into the country from illegal sources, that's what this law does. It makes, okay, great, Addie, you got a new deposit. I need an updated bank statement. Then your Uncle Jim transferred it. Uncle Jim's got to pony up those bank statements, right? Then they're looking through all of those. Now you might think, oh, Addie, you're being dramatic, but what we've experienced is family members, Grandma Susie, Uncle Jim, they don't like sharing their personal financing, showing like, oh, 7-Eleven, $7.99, $20 at Safeway, $400 at Costco. We've actually received bank statements with sharpied out things, like literally grandma going through and sharpieing out all the details. That doesn't suffice. That doesn't qualify.
No.
So once again, going back to the, if you're going to do that transfer game, be upfront. We're going to need full bank statements from your granny. I love you. Thank you. I'll even come over to your house and print them off. I don't have a printer. I'll meet you at Kinko's, whatever it might take. Right. But the way to avoid that for conventional loan programs, folks, do not let them transfer you the money. Have them sign the gift letter, contributing X amount, get pre-approved, wait,
Wait.
Get an accepted offer. Wait.
Wait.
Let Tito and Escrow open up the Switzerland of the financing island and ask Grandma Susie to transfer it directly to Escrow.
Yes.
We have now gone carpool lane during rush hour traffic straight to the promised land.
Yeah.
We have bypassed Sharpies, sticky notes, tears, and screams from all family members. Yeah. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that people don't understand too is, you know, when we're getting those bank statements, like, we're not looking at what you've spent your money on.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
No, we're just trying to see what the deposits have occurred on that account, you know, because if they gave you $10,000, let's just say, and then you're looking through the bank statement and you see some cash, you know, deposits of, you know, whatever
from Blood Diamond LLC,
now we need to know what that is. And the whole reason this is, just like Addy explained, is, you know, the U.S. Patriot Act. It's the Anti-Money Laundering and Terrorism Act. We need to follow money, paper trail it. You need to know where it came from and then what account it went into. Well, that's it.
It's a big popper. It sounds so minimal, but all these little details really impact, like, your experience in the process.
Yes.
And we take, like, a foundational part of our business and service level is to take that normal stress up here, 9.5 out of 10, and try to bring that down to, like, 1.5, 2. Low yeah. stress, low yeah. anxiety.
Average 6.5.
I'm on a bender today. So that actually is supposed to cover our bullet of moving money. So that same storyboard here goes to the same of just you moving money from account to account to account. So let's say you applied with, or I applied with CARP. Hey, Casey, I got my Wells Fargo, my B of A, and what's another, like, my SoFi account, right? Those are my three. But during the process of getting into contract and going through underwriting, I got this sneaky little Charles Schwab account that might have, like, 3 or 4.
Sneaky Charles.
Yeah, sneaky Charles over here. 3 or 4 grand of, like, maybe your failed stock venture, right? And it's just sitting there and you're like, oh, I'm going to sell these. So you liquidate it. Mm-hmm. Then you get an upfront balance. You move it over from, like, the brokerage account to the savings to the money market. Then you transfer it to SoFi via Venmo. Then it's back to the Wells. And we've got the final approval coming up. 3 days have gone by. You're excited for your new home. And a new bank statement needs to be provided to underwriting prior to closing. I send it over to CARP. CARP's like, there's $4,000 in here. Yeah, that's it, right? Well, if you're needing to use that $4,000 now in order to qualify, we got to go through the U.S. Patriot Act and document all those steps. And I'll tell you, sometimes it's like FBI agents in a discovery room where there's, like, all the wanted pictures and, like, the suspects with the red twine to figure out where it all goes.
Yeah.
It becomes a total mess. So moving money is a cardinal sin. If you can avoid it, avoid it. If you can't, be upfront. I got to be upfront with CARP and be like, dude, these are all my accounts. Have a conversation before moving it. CARP, I need to go from here to here. I got to sell my Bitcoin. My Dogecoin's on fire. I also got a kicker rebate from Costco. That check's popping in big time. $1,500 for the hot tub.
Yeah.
Talk about all that stuff with CARP.
Then we'll be able to explain to you in the plan on what needs to be done, you know. And a lot of times too, you see it get sticky with self-employed borrowers where they're just going back and forth from their business account to their personal account. They got business debts. They're paying out of personal debts. They're paying out of business. It's very convoluted. You've now mixed funds. And so we just need to be able to see what's going on and explain that. Again, just remember, this is the highest level of financing that you're trying to get for a loan. This isn't just the payday loan that you're walking in off the streets to try to get to show a W-2, right? This is hundreds of thousands, highest level of financing. So all those conversations are so important to have with us so we can guide you and try to just make it as painful and painless as we can.
I absolutely love that you brought up business bank accounts for self-employed, because those do get really sticky. For example, like, a lot of business owners don't necessarily want to disclose the transaction activity within that business account. However, they're dependent on those funds to purchase the home. So you can't bypass it. Like, one example was within the business accounts for clients I had, there was actually a business loan obligation that wasn't on the personal credit, but it was obviously clear within the business bank statement. So we don't want to provide those and blah, blah, because it'll impact our buying power. Well, you might or might not have to factor it in, but it, once again, it goes back, just be upfront, talk about mm-hmm. it. In that particular case, it was an X factor for me because we had enough income, even counting in that obligation, but there was all the stress brought up and not, and trying
yeah,
not to.
Yeah.
So you just talk about it and be straight up early and not hiding it is always the best way to go.
Yeah. And I think, you know, just kind of based off of that too, with just a side note, you know, mistake is don't just think that because you have a business that that doesn't somehow still kind of affect you sometimes. Like, you are the 100% owner of that business in most cases.
Yeah, and a lot of times it comes down to how you're doing your taxes.
Yeah, and how you're doing your taxes and stuff like that. Sometimes it can be shown that it's a business debt and excluded, or it's just a business liability, doesn't need to be included in the personal. But just have the conversation so we can make sure. Don't assume. You know, we're not CPAs or financial advisors, but neither are you most of the time. Like, don't assume that you know these rules and guidelines and stuff. We need to talk that stuff out because sometimes that can affect your personal financing.
Absolutely. Well, the last one, right? We ready for the last one?
Yeah.
I wrote down, I'm looking at my notepad, recent new debts / late payments. Mm-hmm. So the big one is, do not apply for new credit, take out a new loan, new credit card. If it was recent, maybe you like had bought a new car and then applied for a loan like in that same week, be straight up about that because it's not going to be issued yet on the credit report. Sometimes it shows up like, oh, they ran your credit at like Jimmy John's Auto. I don't know why he used Jimmy John's.
It's Fast Auto. You get a car and a sandwich. But he makes a good point because sometimes it takes time, guys, for that new debt to now
show up
on your credit report. You know, and let's just say maybe that's 30 to 60 days or whatever that requirement is. But you need to be transparent about that because it will come up into your qualifying. Like, that debt will appear some way, shape, or form, or be questioned or show up. And most of the time, this always is going to happen at the last time, right? You know, towards the end of your loan or home purchase,
right,
when you don't want it to.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, if you've been getting debts recently up until your, you know, point of doing your home loan application, like, be transparent about that. Say, yeah, you know, I've opened up a few new credit cards, or I got a car loan or co-signed or whatever.
Well, and another thing too, it's like, not a lot of people know there's a final credit refresh toward the end.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So do a light pull.
Yeah, a little look-ski.
A little peek under the blanket.
Yeah.
To make sure you didn't take out any new debt. Like, one example was, and it was odd, a good faith that a client, I think it was about a year or two ago, they were buying all this stuff on Amazon. And they got, like, we all have had that promotion. You could save X amount by getting this Amazon credit card. It's a pain in the butt to like get a statement, get it back through underwriting, could jeopardize the closing date. But even more importantly, if your debt to income ratio is like right on the edge, which they often are of approved and not approved with how high interest rates are now, you could slide to not being able to qualify for it or needing to pay off that debt in full prior to closing mm-hmm. or at closing, adding hundreds or thousands of dollars to the check that you have to write, and you might or might not have it. So it's best to just not do it if you can avoid it.
Yep.
Lastly, late payments.
Yep.
Guys, this sounds so obvious. You got to make on-time payments. I had a client just the other day, last August, September, November, 3 missed payments just straight up because they changed bank accounts and forgot, quote unquote, to go update their payment information. That really crushes your credit, guys. You don't want any late payments. That just as the easiest, lowest hanging fruit to preserve your credit score. And I can't say that enough. Another really quick story. This was a long time ago, maybe 7 years ago, right? People get pre-approved with me. They're going to sell their home and relocate. They get fully pre-approved under the condition of being contingent of selling their home. The home is on the market for about 60, 70 days. They get an offer. They go into contract. Awesome. Now we can go offer contingent, meaning like our home's going to close in 2-3 weeks. We're going to have the money in 2-3 weeks and offer on new homes. They get into contract. They come to me with the contract. Okay, awesome. We did a refresh on the credit report. They didn't pay their mortgage payment while the home, their home was listed for sale.
Oh, no.
The entire time, because they figured, oh, it's not a big deal. We're selling it.
Oh, no.
They were 2 months late on their mortgage.
Oh, no.
They were able to sell their home, but then they had to wait a full year, a 12-month wait period to demonstrate good rent or mortgage history.
Oh, that is just a dagger.
It's rough.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I wish we would have ended on a higher note. But
yeah, no. Well, you know, on the flip side is, guys, that home hasn't sold yet, so that ownership transfer has not taken place. You are still the owner. You are still responsible for those monthly debts until that is paid off. Think about it. Like, if you were thinking about selling your car.
Right, you still got to make.
You still got to make those payments until the car is sold.
I put it on
sold.
Auto Trader, Casey. I don't need to make the
payments. No. I mean, you know, you still got to make those payments. And the reason we bring that up, guys, is because late payments are big hits to credit. You know, sometimes we see this drop a credit score 100+ points.
Massive.
So you have score drop, and now you have extra requirements and maybe waiting periods to be able to get financing. So, you know. A big part of it. All flipping back to, we just threw a lot at you guys to where we don't expect everybody to know all of this. We expect you to kind of know where you work, how much money you make, roughly what's going on with maybe your credit or credit scores, and how much money you have in the bank. What we just explained was all other stuff that can come up and be part of your financing. And we don't expect you to know all this stuff, but we expect you to try to be as transparent as possible to us so we can see the full picture and help guide you through that process.
Absolutely nailed it. Nice close there. So we just want to take a second and thank everyone that either watched or listened. Like, we do appreciate any sort of engagement, whether you're throwing us a like on our social, sending us a DM, or visiting our website. All of our contact information is in the show notes and details. We love to hear from you. So once again, thank you all. We do appreciate it. And until next time, we will
catch you later.